Well, good morning. So today I wanted to talk about the the EPA's risk evaluation for FTDA gypsum and its use in agriculture. Give you sort of an update on how that's progressing and in what the status is on all that. Some of you may wonder, well, we've been selling FTG gypsum for years for agriculture use. Why is the EPA wondering about it now? Well, here we go. Well, what is this? Yeah, let's see.
I don't know, and that's it. I know it is. I think it is just that we have a.
I have a little box up in the lower right, of the soil science logo.
This one here? Try that. All right, that's better. Okay. So, y'all may remember back in 2008, there was a huge spill at the Tennessee Valley Authority that dumped about 1 billion tons of coal sludge into the local area, and that got a lot of people's attention. It's nothing like a pictures like this in the newspaper to make people concerned about managing coal sludge. And so the EPA decided to do an assessment for the due to this on how they manage coal, the coal combustion residues. And legally, the management of gypsum falls under the same criteria. Even though gypsum was not involved in the spill, it became part of the regulatory issues of that would be under consideration. So originally they came out in 2010 with a proposed rule. They were kind of, I don't know, let's say fishing. They were looking at two possibilities. One would be to continue to regulate it under Subtitle D. The second was they would regulate it under Subtitle C, which would make it considered a hazardous waste. And if it considered a hazardous waste, it would completely eliminate the use of gypsum as a byproduct that you could sell. Nobody would buy a product and put it in wallboards if it was made out of hazardous material. So they moved forward with this, and with a lot of discussions, and then finally in 2005 they did decide to continue to regulate it under Subtitle D, and the final rule was effective in 2015. This rule primarily deals with changes on how they should manage the actual ponds and storage center for the coal ash, but it does have some definitions of what would be allowed under beneficial use, and gypsum, of course, is again considered in part of that. So the rule has 4 criteria you have to meet in order for it to be used for considered a beneficial use. Part of that is if it's encapsulated use, that would be like using gypsum to make concrete. And it's very clear in the rule, because these things have a long time standing. You've already had risk assessments for them. What was less clear was the unencapsulated use, in which agriculture uses flow. So the 4 criteria that you need are it needs to have a functional benefit. In other words, it needs to be used. A lot of this idea is to not have it be a way for the power companies just not to have to landfill it anymore. So they've got these criteria that you have to meet. One of them is that it's a functional use. It has to be a practical use for it. Wallboard, for example. The other is that it has to substitute use for virgin materials. Gypsum clearly meets that, because mined gypsum is commonly used. That's a virgin material if it substitutes for that. The other criteria is that it has to meet relevant product specifications and thus not be used in excess quantities. That's to say, to guide against, guard against the idea that the power company would be find the use for it, but apply it at 10 times the normal rate so they can just get rid of it and get around the rules for land. To meet this criteria, it says that you have to have scientifically based, supported application rates. And as a general rule, they're following the USDA NRCS guidelines for gypsum use as what would be scientifically based uses for gypsum. The fourth criteria is the one that's a little bit particular. It's where they address the issues of environmental release, and it has to be comparable to the anomalous materials, or either it has to be below relevant regulatory and health-based products. And the reason this is a particular point is that FT just had never had a full-up risk assessment done for it, and so it became somewhat of a problem. But they knew this, and they met this issue in two different ways in the rule. The first is they passed what I would consider a stopgap measure. They looked and saw, well, what else is there is a comparable type of use for gypsum? And they said, well, we've got a lot of data on the and full up issues on biosolid regulations. So they said it for the time being, as long as the FTG gypsum does not exceed the rates that we have okayed for biosolids, then it's okay to apply it. But they also said that the agency will conduct a risk assessment and do a full-fledged evaluation to make sure that the FTG gypsum, because it is used in a completely different way than biosolids, is still within these limits. And that's what's been moving forward. So I was just going to talk a little bit about today about where that is and try to cover, let y'all know. The evaluation has the nature of doing this type of thing. It needs to be very conservative. It needs to make sure it is dealing with health risk and environmental risk. And so by nature, it needs to make sure that any possibilities are covered. At the same time, reasonability needs to be involved in the process to make sure that, you know, that you're not just taking a paranoid look at the process. And so they've come up with a process to cover this. They've used it for other materials, such as biosolids and for spent foundry sand, for example. And the actual process, if you're interested, they've come out with a recent publication that describes this whole process and what they do in considering where we're going. The process has three main phases. There's a planning and scoping phase, a impact analysis, and a final characterization. And to date, the EPA has moved down through, checked off all of these. I just added the risk modeling. They finished the simulation modeling on this maybe a couple weeks ago, and they're moving into the final characterization phase of this. And so just to talk a little bit about what that means. And the planning and scoping, the idea is to ask the key questions that you need to understand about what this product's going to do. What is the chemical and physical characteristics? What might be released to the environment? You know, what are the exposures that are of concern? And what is the risk management criteria that's needed to have these things? And so for consideration for ag use, these are the criteria that they were considering. For use, that's calcium fertilizer, sulfur fertilizer, reduction of phosphorus and runoff, alleviation of aluminum toxicity in subsoil, elimination of sodic soils, and improvement of soil physical properties. And these are all covered in one way or another in the NRCS standards So they're kind of based off that as their criteria for what would be reasonable use in this simulation that they are evaluation that they're taking on. So the next thing was come up with a conceptual model, analysis plan, the steps and approaches and accounting for uncertainty. And then they'll, when they got through looking at all these constituents, they settled on 23 unique constituents in the gypsum that needed to be studied and understood and make sure that the risk was evaluated. So the conceptual model looks at every possible pathway that the gypsum, that these constituents in gypsum would have to get into possibly help impact either human health or the ecology. So that would mean the pathways, every conceivable pathway was tried, it was considered movement in the soil, moving through groundwater, getting into the aquatic animals and then eaten by, you know, we eat fish, or getting straight into the air, and then ecology would be the same type of things, soil, surface water, and sediment. And then, but on the other hand, one of the things that they wanted to, they didn't see a need to reinvent the wheel. So if they looked for other existing evaluations that had already considered what the what impacts might have for FTG gypsum, and they found two relevant ones. One was the one that looked at radial nucleotides in the FTG gypsum, and some of you might remember, a fossil gypsum can't be used because it has radium in it. So they did the same thing for FTG gypsum. There's no radiological impacts that were found, so that was eliminated as a concern. The part of this risk assessment for the landfills also had an evaluation, and that was considered in this. And the main thing that came out of that is it eliminated all airborne or air-blown impacts from gypsum. So the other thing that they could do is eliminate the anomalous products, and the obvious one for this would be mined gypsum. So they were not concerned about any heavy metals in the FTG gypsum if it was at the same level or below what you find in mined gypsum. And this allowed them to eliminate a lot of components that were of concern. Most of the heavy metals that are in FTG gypsum come from the limestone that's used to make it, and not from the coal that's burning. It's only a couple of elements that are mercury and selenium, for example, that are actually are contributed from the coal. So there's a lot of elements that could be eliminated by just eliminating the mined gypsum. Unfortunately, they did not find a good source of heavy metals in that they could use as a source for limestone, or they could eliminate it a lot more. So after they looked through that, they eliminated everything that was in these other products or in mined gypsum, and they came down to 12 constituents they still thought that they needed to consider. And so then they started the risk modeling concept. There was three main areas that they simulated in there. It's soil pathways, groundwater pathways, and surface water models. And they would look at both short-term effects and long-term effects. Now, short-term effects for them is considered 100 years of continuous application. And then long-terms is what would happen after 1,000 years. So they're not... But as I said, they've taken a very conservative approach to this and looking at it in very very long-term measures. So, and these are very sophisticated modeling efforts, very time-consuming. For example, they said that the groundwater pathway might take 2 million individual runs per use to get these simulations done, and the surface water was actually the most complicated because it not only had to consider how much these components were running off in, say, a runoff event, but also how much moved through the soil and then moved back into the ground surface water through surface recharge or through like a tile drainage. So they said it took about a week to have one run of the computations through this for those models. Okay, let me speed up here. So these are the ones I think that will settle on to be will be of concern. I don't think any of them will become a real risk, but these are the ones that will not be dismissed out of hand and will be considered more considerably. The selenium is probably the one that will be the most contentious one. It's because it is the one product that's higher than U.S. background soil levels, and so therefore would have some concern. But I don't think that's a real issue because selenium is also a needed compound for animals, including us. And so and the main thing is that sulfate will interfere with selenium take up. So because you're adding calcium sulfate, it will interact and not cause any issues of concern. So the final stage is to conduct a sensitivity analysis, which means filtering through all these runs, and an uncertainty analysis to write up and explain anything that they didn't really cover. And so with that, I think we'll end.
So. Time for one question.
So those numbers in that proposed list that you all have developed, that's based on 100 years of annual application?
The simulation model where they put the gypsum on it and see what happens to it is based on 100 years of that particular treatment. So it's different for if you're using it for a sulfur fertilizer versus for sodic soil is, magnitude difference in application rates. So they take that one treatment, they have it where you're applying it long term. And I think the sodic soils, they don't apply it for 100 years because it's a one-time treatment or short-term treatment. But for things like phosphorus removal and fertilizer, they have annual applications that go into the model for 100 years.
100 years.